Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
One of our New Year's resolutions was that we want to dive deeper into the world of K-pop and Korean hip-hop. And the stars aligned because today we have the opportunity to speak with Tableau, the leader of the group Epic High, who are one of the most influential and innovative groups in Korean hip-hop. Nate, are you familiar with Epic High?
No, I'm not familiar with Epic High.
They're like Wu-Tang or Beastie Boys are to hip-hop in the United States. They're elemental. And over the last week, I have been doing this rabbit hole through their catalog, and it's stunning. Let me play you a single off their new record, Epic High Is Here, Part 1. This is their track, Rosario.
Okay, that is straight fire.
Yeah, you've got your stank face on.
I'm feeling lots of feelings. I mean, I'm loving the transition from like waltz time into this 4/4 hip hop groove. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and then the beat drops and it's like cha 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 cha. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's got a really aggressive beat. It's Tableau's flow is out of control.
Totally the kind of melding of both Korean and English lyrics, but so kind of rapid fire that you don't even necessarily know when it's changing. It's pretty fantastic.
So we can go really deep into this music, but the reality is you and I just really don't know Korean hip hop that well. And before I go into my conversation with Tableau, I thought it would be valuable for the both of us and for listeners who aren't as clued into this music to start off with a very cursory, high-level Korean hip-hop 101.
That tutorial would be much appreciated for a neophyte such as myself.
Okay, great. So I want to share with you a conversation I had with one of the leading scholars of Korean hip-hop.
Hi, my name is Youngdae Kim, music critic and ethnomusicologist.
So Youngdae Kim has a PhD in ethnomusicology from the University of Washington, where he studied K-pop, and he's published definitive texts on Korean hip-hop. I wanted to ask him about how Korean hip-hop developed to understand its unique musical and cultural characteristics, but he actually started by telling his story, because it kind of mirrors the development of Korean hip-hop.
I consider myself as someone who's been, I would say, baptized by American culture since I used to, you know, watch this channel, which is called AFKN, American Forces Korean Network, provided for U.S. soldiers.
So if you live close to a U.S. military base, you can pick up this channel on your TV antenna.
From the morning show, Good Morning America, like Guiding Light, you know, the General Hospital, Johnny Carson, everything.
Even before the end of military rule in South Korea, this hijacked TV station was an important form of exposure to U.S. culture. And the transmission of hip-hop into Korea actually came through direct cultural exchange, similarly, in the clubs near these U.S. military bases.
By the 80s, there were a lot of new types of modern dance halls or nightclubs where you can casually go to any clubs and to meet U.S. soldiers or foreigners to drink.
And Korean dancers were particularly drawn to the music that some of the soldiers were playing.
The club Moon Knight was a popular place where Korean b-boys used to go and hang out with Americans and learn moves from them, you know, dance with them. So it is actually the kind of birthplace of Korean hip hop and Korean b-boy movement.
The fact that American Armed Forces radio and bases may have helped spur the development of these Korean musical styles is like one of the best justifications I've heard for the military industrial complex.
No, totally. And this is part of the story, which I hadn't really considered, that there was actually real exchange of music, dance, and so on. And what's happening in these clubs really reinforces the b-boy dance component of hip hop over the other elements of the culture, rapping, turntablism, graffiti. And the emphasis on dance really crafted the sound of early Korean hip hop.
The fun side of hip hop was more important. They would play any type of music they would dance to. You know, it could be a disco, it could be Herbie Hancock's Rocket, it could be Michael Jackson's music, it could be Run DMC's UB Illin. So rather than listening to Public Enemy or NWA, more socially, you know, conscious hip hop, upbeat, danceable music, that's how they got into the New Jack Swing movement and take it as a first form of Korean hip hop. But it is actually Koreanized American hip hop.
You can hear this New Jack Swing Koreanized American hip hop sound in the group Seotaeji and the Boys in their 1992 song, I Know.
Wow, that is a fantastic mélange of New Jack Swing, and there's like maybe some heavy metal in there.
Yep.
There's rapping, there's vocals.
Yep.
There's my favorite thing about old school hip hop, which is where they've got like the call and response and the hype men backing them up. And yeah, I can see why this would make people want to dance. This is funky as fudge.
No, it totally is.
That's an expression I just coined. Funky as fudge.
No, you're right on. Seotaeji and the Boys were known for this eclecticism, mixing this unique blend of Korean hip-hop and K-pop. And you can hear that eclecticism, the metal, the hip-hop, the R&B, that sound and style and even makeup of the group is new and transformative to what will happen to Korean hip-hop.
This formation itself, you know, singer, producer, mastermind with backup dancer as a legitimate members of the group is a really game changer. It was a new thing. It was probably the prototype of K-pop boy band nowadays.
But just as Seotaeji and the Boys are breaking musical ground with this kind of rap dance variety of Korean hip-hop, early internet communities start developing an entirely different musical scene.
By the mid and late 1990s, there were a group of youngsters who thought that's not real. It's dance music, but it's not hip-hop.
This is really cool. What begins as a disparate internet forum commenting on Korean rap dance music turns into its own musical scene.
There were a group of people who believed that listening to the music was not enough. So they started the first Korean underground scene.
One of the things that these underground artists realize is that rap dance is missing an essential component, like truly essential component of hip-hop.
Their biggest complaint about the Seotaeji and the Boys and all the New Jack Swing groups, you know, they're really good dancers, really good performers, really good singers or beat makers, but they're really not really good lyricists or rapper.
That does seem like an essential quality of hip-hop.
Yeah, totally. It's maybe hard to capture through translation, but that early rap dance Korean hip-hop style was not just like maybe lacking in rapping, it didn't rhyme. It's kind of hard to believe, but early Korean hip-hop artists didn't emphasize rhyming. It just wasn't an important part of their rap.
The popular belief was that Korean language is not good for rap. Because of the system of syllables and the characteristics of language, it is not really good for making good rap lyrics.
Okay, so you see, in Korean, the verb conjugation endings tend to end with very similar syllables, like O, which makes rhyme sounds not particularly creative or edgy. which is such an important part of hip hop, right? Is showing off your creativity and the way that you can rhyme. So this underground scene starts to find new ways of using near rhymes, interior rhymes, and mixed language rhyming, including English words, and finding unique and creative grammatical structures to create a Korean hip hop flow of their own.
And this is coming from this internet underground community who are kind of inspired by this new dance rap scene, but also feel like it's not true enough to the spirit of hip hop.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so it's not until 2001 where we get a pivotal record called Modern Rhymes by the artist Verbal Jint, where we start to hear rhyming in rap flows in Korean hip hop.
Straight from the streets of Seoul, 모두 좀 더 비켜서 너희들의 곤욕이 있어도 낭비할 시간이 없다고 날 이기려면 기분부터 바로 배워야 할 텐데 하는 꼴을 보니 낯선네 너희가 몇 마디 말 때문에 고민할 때네 flow는 깊어만 가는데 날 이겨낸다는 게 너희들로서 거의 불가능해.
That is hot, hot fire. I am feeling that so hard.
It's kind of hard to believe that rhyming is developed just in 2001.
Is that true? Is it just in hip hop or is it in like popular music in general?
It's not to say that there is no rhyming, but in general, rhyming just wasn't privileged in Korean pop music at this point. But once Verbal Jint releases Modern Rhymes, there are all these artists who are inspired and start to develop much more complex and creative rhyme schemes, which leads us to the subject of this episode.
Epic High is another really good example. They're the combination of Korean Americans and underground hip hop. But their music is still danceable. Their music embraces a lot of non hip hop elements as well. They're one of the really rare cases that fit into every category. Like, they could be considered as K-pop. They could be underground hip-hop. But they're overground hip-hop band as well. That's probably why they're the most successful in the modern era. And they're probably most well-received, both by critics and fans as well. They have everything, you know. Tablo is a superb lyricist, both in English and Korean languages, really, you know, rare talent. But also, he doesn't really limit his talent in more legitimate hip-hop beats or hip-hop production. You know, he used a really kind of minimal production, and he heavily borrowed everything from every genre, like electronic music, you know, hip hop and R&B and rock, even rock and, you know, other genres.
Oh my god, I'm freaking out. That's so good.
You know, Two Cut and Misra, the two DJs, their music and their production styles are definitely based on the traditional turntablism. So this combination, more eclectic songwriting talents of Tablo and the great talent as a lyricist and the more traditional turntablism, you know, combine to make this unique creation called Epic High.
So Epic High hits on this formula, blending underground boom bap New York style beats with multilingual lyrical dexterity and cross-genre danceable tracks that transcend their underground roots.
Yeah, sign me up.
By the early 2000s, hip hop was still underground movement. But Epic High, based on these different types of streams and origins, underground hip hop, Korean American movement, or hip hop as a dance music, they successfully combined these all different types of streams to make more accessible, you know, hip-hop acts that would put hip-hop on the map of the mainstream music.
So in the 2010s, Korean hip-hop totally takes off. There are reality TV competitions like Show Me the Money that brings the sounds into every household in the country.
Follow me. I go, I go, I go. Now why
Johnny, go hard, go hard, go hard. One more time, say. And the influence of Epic High and other acts who pioneered that eclectic approach of Korean hip hop has even influenced K-pop writ large.
Korean hip hop idol, BTS or Big Bang, they actually inherited all these different types of traditions. They learn this American style of hip hop from Korean American rappers. They use the similar technique, rhyming skills of the one developed in the hip hop community, underground hip hop community. But they still maintain their identity as a great performer and a great dancer. So these new model, I think BTS and others, they really kind of prove that Korean hip hop is evolving into this eclectic nature, which is probably one of the things that makes Korean hip hop really unique.
I feel like the scales have fallen from my eyes, or from my ears, I should say. I mean, I knew that Korean hip hop was a thing, but I don't think I had any real appreciation for the depth of the artistry and the kind of surprising contours of its history. I don't know. This is very illuminating.
Yeah, and obviously there's a much bigger history here. We could have gone much deeper. We'll try to add more detail in the show notes. But the big takeaway for me is that there's been this fascinating, you know, I wanted to say arc, but it almost feels like we've come full circle to a certain degree, right? Of this cultural exchange that happens on U.S. military bases in the 1980s to these underground internet forums that bring Korean American voices into the fold, and the development of this music, which is rap dance, it is underground hip hop, it is mainstream hip hop, it is music that influences the creation of contemporary K-pop and idol groups, and that those groups are now pioneering sounds that are coming back to the United States. We're seeing this full cycle happen where influence upon influence is crossing shores and changing the sound of popular music.
Yeah, deep. All right, you go talk to Tableau about that. I'm gonna spin some Epic High and Verbal Djent, and maybe we can meet back at the end.
All right, great.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, my name is Tableau, and I am one of the members of Epic High, which is a Korean hip-hop group. That's Epic with a K. I'm glad we decided to spell it that way, because trying to Google Epic with a C, you would get a lot of other things. So, yeah.
Probably a dispensary somewhere in Los Angeles.
Yes. Funny thing, a year ago, we were trending for no apparent reason, and we hadn't even released an album. And my members are like, why are we like worldwide trending number one? And I'm like, looking, and I look at the date, and it was 420. So I'm trying to explain the concept of 420 to them.
Oh, what a proud moment. Everyone must be so proud. this is a very exciting moment. You've just released Epic High is here. It's your 10th studio album.
Yes.
things can change.
You have called it dark with some slivers of hope. I'm wondering, what are you trying to communicate on this record?
So when I began making the record, that was pre-COVID. The album was being created in a world that was familiar to not just me, but to everyone else. You know, it was just the day-to-day. So the sound and also the content of the music was somewhere along the lines of what we had always done.
And how would you describe that? Like, set some context of the sound, something you've always done. What does that mean?
So a lot of our music is very emotional, sort of down-tempo, lo-fi.
A lot of boom-bap beats.
Yes, and that's the music that we're mostly known for. And that's what we had been working on. And then COVID struck, and all our plans for 2020 just disappeared,
right?
Just like everyone else. This thing occurred to me that this is the first time in my lifetime, at least, where the entire world is feeling the same fear, same confusion, depression.
Right.
All of these different emotions are being shared at this moment. It's something I had never experienced. Everything on the news globally, not just with the pandemic, but 2020 was, aside from the pandemic, for some odd reason, globally, there were things going on that were enraging to people, almost suffocating, right? And when these things were happening right in front of my eyes on TV, and also just not being able to go out, I think it changed my mindset and also the music. The music started changing dramatically and then became what this album that we just dropped became.
Yeah, the sound here is, I don't know quite how to put it, it's subdued. Definitely can feel dark. I get quite somber, quiet acoustic instrumentation with beats accompanying them. This very strange juxtaposition.
Yes.
I'm curious about how you arrived at that sound.
A good example is her song Rosario, which happens to be the lead single.
Yeah.
So the way I craft songs is I try to bring back a certain memory or a moment and try to recreate what that moment made me feel. So the feelings that I was getting during the lockdowns and everything going on in 2020 was that I'm sad, I am subdued, but at the same time, there's this just angst and anger and this indescribable emotion where, like, you're feeling something passively and extremely actively at the same time. And it made me think of this one memory I have. When I was in high school, I went to Mexico and I stayed with a family there. And the house that I was in, it didn't have a ceiling. They had a huge blanket just covering where the ceiling should be. So I was there volunteering and staying with this family. And on the weekend, the whole neighborhood would gather and they would play music. And the music I heard back then, it was sad but so powerful, dark but so beautiful. The things that I was going through mentally in 2020, like, it made me think of that moment. And when I went into the studio and I was working with all my collaborators, I told them that story and how that's what a lot of people must be feeling.
And so we get at the opening of Rosario this Spanish-style guitar. It's played somewhat, and I don't say this negatively, but it's played somewhat amateurly. Like, it sounds like someone's sitting around, hanging with the family, playing the guitar. There's little flubs. It's not perfect. And we get this Spanish-style guitar that's obviously evocative of this place that it came from.
Yes. When we actually recorded the guitar, that was, like, the first take.
Yeah.
And if you notice, there's, like, kind of messes up. The guitar player messes up.
Right.
Yeah, but we just were like, oh, I love that. I love that. Like,
it feels real.
How it's imperfect. And let's go with that.
And then it becomes quite contemporary.
Yeah.
Tell me about how you wanted to merge that story with where you are today. Clearly the sound changes. We get a very contemporary trap style beat, and you enter with a fairly aggressive style vocal, especially coming out of the opening song, which is a much more laid back track.
Yeah, so what I was going through mentally was that the entire world is feeling all of these, you know, shared emotions, confusion and just a lack of optimism.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was a moment where everyone in the world also was hoping for something amazing to happen, not only in medicine, but, you know, politics, just all around, right?
Right.
It made me feel like even in this moment of shared somberness, there is something growing where everyone is coming together to do something amazing as human beings. It made me feel like if I wanted to create a sonic version of what I was feeling, it needed to be something somber, something sad, but also incredibly energetic and almost aggressive. Like, I wanted the music to sound like Beautiful Confusion, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think that's exactly what everyone is feeling at this moment. That's at least what I'm feeling. Out of my way, I am a legend and I'm here to stay. Get in my way, Pokemon having that kid even met. I pick the way for everyone that is paving the way. Mighty my name, ain't no one giving a fuck what you say. Moment of silence. I love that I was able to spend a year so close to my family, to my loved ones. But at the same time, it's, you know, each day goes by and you grow wary of the fact that things may not get back to normal soon. And there's this chaos that is brewing constantly underneath the surface.
And I imagine, you know, you're a father, you have a family. As much as we want to be spending time with our loved ones, we're also wanting our family, our young ones especially, to be able to go out and experience the world and grow and have a bigger experience than they're able to have at this moment.
Yes. And I think that's basically the thesis that I had for what this album should be, and that's how I tackled each song. Like, the first song, Lesson Zero, I try to juxtapose. Like, if you just listen to the lyrics or read the lyrics, you would imagine a hard-hitting, aggressive beat.
Right.
Give everyone a voice, but leash them with the mic cord. Feed you things to fight about instead of things to fight for. Teach you everything you want, but nothing you need. That everything's got a price and nothing is free. They'll turn everything to nothing. They make you believe that everything is under control and there's nothing to see. No more lessons, please take me back to zero.
But I placed it over a very peaceful piano.
It's almost a ballad.
Well, it basically is a ballad. And I did that deliberately to keep up with this thing that I was feeling. I needed every song to seem like a paradox almost.
There's this tension where you're both stuck in place and there's that pent up quality.
Yes.
Right? Because that Lesson Zero opens up with this beautiful sung melody. And then once your verse starts, we get into some of the most troubling material of our current age. You have a line, for example, like, addicted to the news, views, superstitions, to keep the visionaries glued to their televisions.
Yeah.
They teach you to heed the word of a God who has never spoken, to fear breaking the law when it's already broken, that to feel is to be weak, to suppress emotion, so no one sees you at a heart till your chest is open. They got you hating who you are, to sell you pills and fiction, reaching for the stars when you were born up there with them, addicted to the news, views, superstitions, to keep the visionaries glued to their televisions.
They want that you feels to step into the right particularly of this moment.
Experiencing a whole year of not being able to do much for anyone, sometimes it's very serene, right? It's almost idyllic in how, you know, you wake up, you can take your time to get your coffee, you pick up new hobbies, and sometimes you're like convinced that it might just be better living this way. And then that undercurrent of reality just creeps up and just punches you in the gut every few times a day.
Yeah.
That's how I knew my audience was feeling. They were feeling like, you know, oh, it's great to work from home. Oh, it's great not going to school, doing virtual school. I love being in my PJs. But at the same time, there's this anxiety just creeping up like 20 times a day. And that's sort of how I wanted Lesson Zero to sound.
Yeah, especially for, you know, every single time we realize that we have so many friends, loved ones, and others who are not able to stay at home, who might have to be on the front lines of this pandemic, and we're reminded of that constantly.
Yes. You almost feel a sense of guilt for being okay. When also in reality, like, that's what they're fighting for, so that everyone can be okay, right?
Right.
I've never had the world have a hand in my creative process as much as this past year.
Hmm.
For example, there's a song called Based on a True Story, which is probably the only pure love song almost on the album. And I had great difficulty writing lyrics or rapping in a way where it didn't sound aggressive. I was almost incapable of not being aggressive. Because, you know, I'd be working on the song, I would take a break, I'd turn on the TV, and immediately, you know, my mind would drift away from love or a longing and go into something dark. And I kept fighting it and then decided that, no, I think a love song from this perspective is perfectly fine. So if you listen to the song, like, the music is almost like a Studio Ghibli film, like OST, right? Like a soundtrack. It's very peaceful, pretty sounding, but my rap is very aggressive on that track as well.
You can hear the conflict that you were experiencing even in the studio and more broadly that you were trying to establish in this record in those very moments. I'm curious, is there a particular lyric that perhaps encapsulates that feeling in the song?
I say that even if there's a thread of emotion poking out, I am cutting it off because I am afraid that if anyone picks at it or pulls on it, all of me will unravel. And that's how I end my first verse. And this is a love song. You know, this is a song where somebody is missing someone that they used to be in love with. They're alone now. And, you know, they're longing for somebody. That's a weird lyric to be in a Korean love song.
How come?
Because it's too personal, I think. A bit too dark.
It's taboo?
Well, not taboo, but because I literally say me. I say, this is what I'm doing to myself, you know? It's almost clear that I'm not speaking from the perspective of the subject of the character in the song. You can tell that this is being said by Tableau, like by me as a human being, almost as a confession to the listener. I just decided to stick with that, even though, you know, my members were like, do you think this, like, song is getting, like, the rap is getting too dark for the song? Like, it's also, you're spinning it in a way where it's very aggressive. They're like, do you want to maybe, like, tone it down and try to sound kind of just more peaceful or melodic? I kept listening to it and I just decided not to because I felt like this was just real.
I'm curious, you know, as I was preparing for this interview, I was seeing that over the last couple of years, home, family life, privacy have all been very important to you. And I'm curious about how you manage the way that the music requires that kind of emotional honesty when there's also, you know, a need when you have such a substantive global fandom to also have your own space. How do you manage that conflict in the creative process?
I sort of actually just talk about it on the album. There's a track called Social Distance 16, where I say that I've been social distancing from the industry and from my public life, maybe. And this has been something that I've been doing for nearly over 10 years. I had some things happen to me about 10, 11 years ago now. There was a scandal that overtook my life for about 2-3 years. And it was extremely bad. It's not gonna sound like it makes any sense in retrospect, but at the time, it is what happened. People didn't believe that I had gone to the college I went to. My college was like, no, he went here. And they still didn't believe it. And for some odd reason, it became this nationally televised scandal for years. For some reason, I still do not understand.
My understanding, it was all completely disproven. It was completely a lie. It was completely made up. And
no matter how much proof came out, people just would not believe it. And it became this huge thing where there were protests against me in the street. My career was done. All of my family members lost jobs. My father became ill and passed away. So pretty much everything that was dear to me was taken away from me. This happened like right as my daughter was born. So needless to say, it was a difficult and very confusing time for me. The only way to actually understand that what happened, there's actually a Wired article in English.
Yeah.
They were trying to figure out what it is. You know, I think it was the first case of fake news and cyber harassment, bullying, like all wrapped into one. That is something that you don't really recover from because the things I lost are irreplaceable. I can get my career back, but not my family. So I think that still influences the way I think, the way I view the world. And that is why I say that I've always been social distancing.
Quarantine, we in quarantine. The industry makes me sick and there's no vaccine. 멀쩡한 날 병들게 하니 빌어먹었으니. Ain't nothing new, I've always been social distancing.
Basically, my career was over at that moment. And I imagined that I would never be able to make music again. And that's sort of when I started distancing myself from what you would call the industry, I guess.
Sure.
I started functioning more individually and independently. I kept away from hugely public appearances and stuff like that. And as a result, I've become a master of keeping my loved ones out of the light when I need to.
Right.
Even though a few years ago, my daughter and I were the subject of a reality show, which was the most popular show in Korea. So, you know, it's strange that I'm able to do that, but at the same time, somehow maintain my privacy.
I imagine even in the framework of reality television, in the same way that whole life is a performance of different characters and different ways of being.
Yes.
The part of you that you share, I imagine, must be a performance of the conception of your identity as Tableau.
Yes. That is an interesting way to think about it because I do feel like there are only two places where I'm completely honest. One, being home with my family.
Right.
I am 100% always completely honest and sincere and true to myself. And then it's in my music. When I'm writing the lyrics or writing the songs, I will say things that I probably wouldn't be allowed to say in public or on TV or in the media. And that is probably why I'm so drawn to music. It's like the only place where I can say some terrible things that I'm feeling or some horrible things that I can't work out in my mind. And it becomes something positive, like it becomes something beautiful, like people listen to it and they tell me that they identify with it. And I think these two spaces are the only spaces where I'm allowed to do that. And fortunately, these two spaces are the only two spaces I exist in at the moment.
What you were just speaking about, using music to say things you can't say in other ways, mm-hmm. even potentially, to yourself. Years ago, we had this great intern, Olivia, and she talked about the reason why that she loved pop music was because it gave her emotional cues to sort of expand her own emotional life. Like, I can express myself in a way that I hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. So it seems that is an important part of your process, is finding something that is particularly vulnerable and almost unsafe for you to share so that others can mirror that experience.
Yes. K-pop music is many things, is many great things. It's very vibrant. It's extremely fun, very well produced.
Deeply.
And once you fall into that rabbit hole, it's really hard to get out. K-pop is pretty amazing. But one thing it is not amazing at is brutal honesty or brutal emotional vulnerability in its songs. Mm. It's very guarded. And there's reason to be, right? There's a whole system around it. There's an industry around it.
Right.
And also, most often, the music is being written by someone else. And then there are the rare exceptions, right? Like BTS, for example,
right,
is the definitive K-pop group, but their lyrics expose their vulnerabilities. And the lyrics are very honest. And I think that's why they've been able to connect so well with so many different people. But I would not say that that's entirely common. It's really hard to expose vulnerability in K-pop, but it needs to be done. And I'm glad to see that a lot of musicians are doing it now.
Well, it clearly is attracting audiences. BTS Army listens to our show and wants us to do better coverage of BTS, which we really need to do. One of the things that they always point to is exactly that authenticity, the emotional sort of depth and integrity that makes them really stand out.
Yes.
And I know they've looked to you and Epic High as influences, and I know you've all collaborated as well. It seems as though there's a threshold that has been crossed. Mm-hmm. That emotional stasis maybe isn't actually what audiences want. They want that release.
Yes. Harking back on what I was talking about with my lyrics on this album, they want those threads, like those loose threads. They don't want this perfect ball of string without any loose ends. I think the audience is looking for these loose threads that poke out so they can hold on to them. And that's what a lot of musicians are beginning to do. I think that if there was a threshold that just was never crossed, I think it's been crossed. Mm. And musicians like myself, BTS, and a lot of the independent music that's coming out in Korea, these are all people in different genres and different spheres, different spaces, all doing this thing, which is great, but still not entirely common.
I understand that hip-hop in Korea, especially underground hip-hop, and I know you all started out independent and have both been through the industry system and are now independent again.
Yes.
The sort of independent music, it seems, has been a slow-burning, very important influence on exactly what we're talking about here, the capacity to express things in music that might be less emotionally restrained. And it seems to me that we are in a place where now there might be more awareness from industry and idol makers that, maybe that's part of the formula now. Like, maybe we actually need to be more honest in the music, find kinds of emotional authenticity. Do you worry about the sort of loss from, or that transmission from that underground scene towards a more industry scene? Do you think it affects how you think you want to express yourself in your music? How do you see that dynamic?
Thankfully, all of the industry people that are trying to do that, it's readily visible that that it's not authentic.
It's hard to manufacture authenticity.
Yeah, it's that it's not authentic. It's manufactured. And a lot of companies are trying to do that. I can see it. But it's so manufactured that, you know, people will know. I always say the audience is far, far more aware and far more intelligent than any label or any suit, honestly, right? Any company or any industry. I believe that the audience is always ahead and they're ready for a lot more authenticity. So anyone trying to manufacture it is never gonna fly.
So fun songs, upbeat songs, whatever, you're just like, you know, party music, totally cool. Like, it's not to throw shade on it, but it's very hard to, what I'm hearing, to have that, those threads that you're saying, those uncomfortable moments. People haven't quite found a way to fit that into idol-based K-pop.
Yeah, when anything is benchmarked, like when anything is mimicked, it's just not gonna be authentic. So I think what K-pop would need is to give the pen and the mic to more individuals. That I think that is what needs to happen. Like, these companies are not going to be able to create BTS. They're not going to be able to create an Epic High. It's going to have to be some kid who has a unique personality, a unique inner world, both dreamlike and nightmarish. So basically a human being, right? Just
right.
A real, authentic human being who has talent. You give him or her a pen or a mic or a huge playground for their emotions and then see where it goes.
I love that perspective. Maybe we can bookend our conversation with the end of your record. In fact, this is just the first half of a two-part record, so we don't know where it's going to go. But I feel as though the final song really encapsulates a lot of what we've been speaking about. Melancholy, it's deep, it's personal. Can you set the stage of how you end your record and what you're trying to say?
So I had a conversation with my daughter while I was making the album. And my daughter loves that I'm home all the time, that I'm a stay-home dad. Like, she literally loves that I'm home and she wants me to stay home, right? And she literally said, "Stay home, dad." And I was like, "Hey, that's what I am." That's the conversation that I just wanted to put on record.
For the last few years, it's been pouring rain, so I've been a stay home dad. My daughter saw the pain and whispered, "Stay home, dad."
And people, I made the track, and then I went into the booth to record a verse over it, and I thought of the many different things I could do. I could just do a straight rap. I could rap about pretty much anything to close up an album.
Right.
And I decided to go with something very simple and very almost the opposite of grand. If Lesson Zero started off with this monologue or soliloquy about like religion and the world and just everything going on.
Give everyone a voice, but leash them with the mic cord. Feed you things to fight about instead of things to fight for. Teach you everything you want, but nothing you need. That everything's got a price and nothing is free. They'll turn everything to nothing to make you believe that everything is under control and there's nothing to see. No more
lessons. The song kind of rises and builds and gets bigger and bigger throughout.
And I wanted to close the album with just this small intimate moment between me and my daughter.
And so we get the song Wish You Were.
Yes.
Wish You Were.
I can't really explain exactly why I decided to do that, but I felt like if the album begins with a person that is dealing with the external world infringing upon their inner world or commanding their inner world, the last song of the album is a song that deals with a person that is letting their small, intimate inner world keep the outer world at bay, kind of. Just saying that the outside world thinks I'm washed up because, you know, I'm not putting out records. I'm a stay-home dad. I'm older now. I never come out. You never see me in public or on TV. So the outside world is saying that I'm washed up. But I'd rather be washed up than drowning in like past glory. You know, I'd rather be right here with my daughter, with my family on shore. I think that's what I was trying to say with this album. Like, to whoever is listening, I know what everyone's going through, because everyone's going through the same thing now, albeit in different ways, in different degrees, but we are all feeling this uncertainty and this anxiety. And the last song was my way of saying that there is hope. Just don't look for it in extravagant places. You know, there is hope, but don't hope that it comes in this amazing package. Like, it might just be what's right in front of your eyes. That's it.
Perhaps that's also why the sounds of this record, they're not extravagant. Like we talked about with Rosario, like the guitar is just, it's the first take.
Yeah.
And that's sufficient. The sounds are just sufficient. They're human. And this is ultimately just the first half. So I hope that where the world is at, when Epic High Is Here Part 2 comes out, it's more hope and less darkness. And maybe we'll hear that in the record. And I hope that's where our world's going to be.
I really hope so, too.
Thank you so much for joining me and being open and honest about your music.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Switched on Pop is produced by Charlie Harding, Nate Sloan, and Bridget Armstrong. Brandon McFarland is our editor, engineer, and mixer.
Though this week we were delightfully engineered by our old friend, Bill Lance.
Iris Gottlieb does our illustrations, Abby Barr, social media, and Nishat Kurwa and Liz Nelson are executive producers. We're proud members of the Vox Media Podcast Network.
I want to send a big thank you and shout out to Young Day Kim, who just is, his knowledge on this music is so deep.
Amen.
If you want to read more, he has a great article on Vulture called A Brief History of Korean Hip Hop, and we'll link to that in our show notes.
Tune in next week, because we have a very exciting, very special, very secret announcement that we are going to make. What we can tell you now is that we will also be discussing the music of a performer who will be at an event in which men run up and down a piece of grass and throw things at each other. Very suspenseful. And until then, thanks for listening.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative, along with Jack Daniels, Tennessee Honey, and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon, taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.